Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening and welcome live from Houston, Texas. And I want to let you know something. You just missed, I can point at it right there, the most beautiful sunset in the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. 5 minutes earlier and you would have caught it. It's just absolutely gorgeous. And it makes you wonder, as I was watching that, just turned around watching it go down, like, how can something so beautiful in the sky that you know is just God ordained go down on a city, and as you go into the streets, you find so much hurt and pain? Mm-hmm. Tell you what, that's exactly what we're going to talk about today and tonight. And we really want to get you involved tonight. I just hope you call your neighbors and friends and say, hey, this is going to be an awesome show this evening. I want to let you know we have a great guest, and the rest of April is just phenomenal here on Breaking the Silence. Next week, we have Leah Samorin, and she is the founder and the president. She's a breast cancer survivor, and she is the founder and president of Paddle for the Cure in New York City. She will be here next week talking about her battle, her struggle, her survival, and her victory through that. And then the following week, in 2 weeks from tonight at 8 p.m. Central, will be Cornelius Johnson, and he is with Slim Strength. He is the CEO of Slim Strength Sports Apparel Company, a world-known company around the world. And matter of fact, I've ordered some shirts from him. I'm going to be wearing in 2 weeks. Awesome. They say your testimony on the front, and they're really, really great. And he's going to be with us and talk about his own personal struggle in his life as a child in the foster care system, being somewhat felt unloved, and how he battled through that and just came out victorious to be a CEO of a very successful company. If you want to get involved tonight, like always, we don't get a lot of phone calls, but if you want to, we will sure entertain a question, 888-627-6008. But tonight, I want to jump right smack dab into our guest this evening from Massachusetts, a wonderful state way up there that I don't think I've ever been. That's one of those states I don't think I've ever been in. We have Barbara Joy Hansen, and she wrote a book right here called Listen to the Cry of the Child, The Deafening Silence of Sexual Abuse, live from Massachusetts. Barbara, are you with us tonight?
Yes, I sure am, and I want to thank you so much, Dr. Greg or Gregory. Which do you prefer?
I'll go by Greg, just as long as you don't call me late for supper, we're going to get along great. Now, do you go by Barbara or Bobby?
On my co-host show, NASCA, Stop Child Abuse Adult Survivors, I go by Bobby Joy, but people can find me as Barbara Joy Hansen, so I prefer that on a show.
Okay, great. So we'll call you Barbara, and your name is right there so everybody can know who you are. Tell me, Barbara, before, because we've been talking back and forth, I believe we have a common friend in Miss Texas, and that's kind of, I believe, how we got to know each other, then we got into LinkedIn. Oh, look here we go, and that's what she does with the Miss Texas show. And the whole PYX, I believe, is the name of the organization, and you are an ambassador for that. So wonderful. Tell me, Barbara, what, because we have no pre-planned questions, and I love that because I just kind of go with the flow. What do you feel passionate about that gets you going every morning to keep on going, to keep on going. And that you know it's just something that you are designed to do for the rest of our life. Tell me, first of all, just introduce yourself to everybody, what you do, and then what it is that you're so passionate about in life.
Well, I wake up thinking about how I can change somebody's world, how I can give somebody hope, how I can make a difference, because there's so much tragedy and so much heartache and so much anger and so much bitterness all over the world, all over the U.S. And I had no idea. I mean, you and I joined the force of a choir that we didn't really want to sing in and a road that was really tragically bumpy and rocky. And I never, ever would have dreamed, because I didn't think I had a story. I didn't think I had a testimony growing up in a godly Christian home with a mother and father that absolutely adored me. My brother is 2 years older, and it was my home was a safe place. So I grew up being loved. My daddy was my protector. He didn't know that. My mother didn't know. I didn't have words to tell what happened to me. But you asked about what makes me driven. I have such a passion and purpose to set other captives free, other prisoners free from shame. And for a long time, I didn't know what that passion and purpose was. Not until my mid-40s did all this stuff start boiling up and coming out, and it was like a volcano erupted. It was a sound that I tried to deny that was like a distant drum, a beating of a distant drum. There was a high price to this kind of a call. And very few people are qualified for the call that we have on our lives, and it's a heavy one. And I had much persecution. I was ostracized, criticized by family, cousins that shut down on me, said, I never want to see you again, who were molested by my grandfather as well as me. And then they blamed me for spewing it out at my uncle's funeral. My uncle was a pedophile. I don't believe I wrote that part in my book. But each year and each speaking engagement, more and more comes out. So when I spewed it out about my uncle, who I avoided, he did not molest me. My grandfather on my mother's side did. But when you're blamed, blame says I did something wrong. Shame says I did something wrong. Blame says something's wrong with me. Blame says I did a bad thing. Shame says I am the bad person. So, all of the above, you're shamed, you're blamed. But God always, if this is your call and you wake up driven, which I am, I have a lot of energy, and thank God I'm not sick. I've had my COVID shots, and my husband's 100% behind me now. For a while, he wasn't, but in the very beginning, when I wrote my book, Listen to the Cry of the Child, The Deafening Silence of Sexual Abuse, it wasn't just about sexual abuse. As you've read my book, there were secrets in my life, in my marriage. I shut down by just about everything. And I went through just about everything except abortion. I went through the incest with grandpa at age around 2 to 8. And this is me at around 5, maybe, at the farm where that was a safe place. That was the other grandparents. So that was a good place for me to be, at the farm with the chickens and the cows and watching the calves be born all of that. And this is the age of the clergy sex abuse. I was anorexic. I was sick. I was scrawny. I stuffed my little bras because I wasn't developed. And as a doctor, you know that this totally affects you forever, and you never get over it, really. You never forget it.
Tell me, you first of all was molested from 2 to 8 mm-hmm. by your grandfather. Then when did the clergy abuse happen? How many years later, or was it during the same time explain how that worked and the impact, I think, of those 6 years. As a child, did you know what was going on? Did you know it was wrong? Did you know how to even deal with any of it? How did you process some of that in the first portion of your story, that 2 to 8 year old?
I didn't. I mean, we had no words to tell. My brain wasn't developed. At around 8, I thought, okay, something's up. This isn't right. At age, 3, 4, he'd walk in my bath time. He would take me, always my grandfather, out in the car by myself to get ice cream. It was a fish to a fish hook reeling me in. And I absolutely was terrified when he unzipped himself and wanted me to touch him. And I went way over on the side of the car and tried to jump out. And then, of course, you're told not to tell, and you don't. And I didn't for 38 years. So at age 8, I thought, I got to stop this somehow. And I thought, okay, what can I do? So at age 8, I never hugged him hello or goodbye again. And I was afraid that somebody would say, go hug. I mean, when you go to your grandparents, right? Yeah. But nobody did. Now, I found out years later when my mother was 83, that she was a victim of his. And I knew it when I, as an adult, and I was starting to process it and learn and all that. I knew that he would have done it to my mother first. And there's always more than one victim, as you know. Every 2 minutes, a child is molested. Every 5 minutes, a woman is raped. 1 out of 3 sexual predators go on to molest. However, while most children are not predators. And incest, I'll tell you, is like the worst of the worst of the worst crimes. And it is a crime.
In your point of view, you make that statement, that's a correct statement.
Yes.
Why is it worse than a stranger? Kind of clarify on that, expand on that a little bit. Why is the incest like the most unbelievable?
Because you're supposed to trust the person that is your grandfather. I mean, what grandfather would hurt this child, and what pastor would hurt that child at age 11 and 12? Two summers in a row, he came back to the campgrounds in New York State. So the incest is the worst secret. And do you know that in Leviticus 18:6, it says, thou shalt not uncover thy nakedness with next of kin? Well, how clear is that? And 80% of all sexual abuse is incest. 97% are responsible of reported abuse cases. And they're hardly ever stranger. I shouldn't say never, because I've had various things happen where a man would, stick out his tongue at me or expose himself in the woods. And 200,000 to 500,000 children are molested in the United States of America, and 100,000 are reported. And the pedophiles aren't caught. So they're sitting next to us in church. They're behind us in the grocery store. They just haven't been caught. So you cannot control, this kind of a seeping volcano that is everywhere, and nobody wants to hear it.
In the more modern era now, here we are in 2021. Here we are supposedly in a very civilized culture and world. Has it got any better?
Nobody wants to hear our stories. When I'm on my LinkedIn account, people put in things about human trafficking and abuse, and maybe I'm the only one that connects, because I am a survivor, and I'm a victorious survivor, and I'm a thriver and courageous now that I'm bold enough to tell my testimony everywhere. Like you, I hand out my cards with my book cover on it anywhere, everywhere. Yeah. I go. And I've been shamed for that by one of my members of my family.
Well, I tell you, I think those numbers that you gave out with all the numbers, 1 out of 4, 1 out of 3, 1 out of 5 boys.
Right.
I believe those are probably on the low end. Believe that probably 40 to 50% of every child by the time they're 18 is going to be somewhat gone through somewhat of a traumatic experience sexually with somebody that, and what is it, 85 to 93% of the people are always the people they know.
Yeah, 97% are, and they're in prison, and we're in prison ministry. I've been in prisons worldwide, all over the world, Scotland, and I've been to Australia and had prison conferences with the Family Prisoner Conference, and I won the poster. I don't know if you can see it behind me. Can you see the poster?
Yeah, I sure can. Yeah.
Okay, so this... I won the poster presentation for this in San Diego, California, and this is on the top of it. Have you been victimized by sexual abuse? Sexual abuse must stop now with my book on it. So I won the poster presentation here in San Diego, California at Abuse and Trauma Conference. Out of 1,500 people in the military are out in San Diego. My book promoter went with me. She's a former alcoholic, incest survivor, and a lot of other things. So in my classes I teach, let me raise this up so you can see it. Can you see that now?
You're on, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is how I thought about myself. Shame, blame, enable, silent, scream, broken, cocoon, no identity, control, dungeon, guilt, shackled, blackness, damage, soul damage, I'm bad, I'm a hostage. That I pass out blank masks in my support group, Beauty Out of Ashes. And I have one word on the top. Who am I? Victim. With no words. On the bottom, how do I see myself? And those, before I totally recovered from the damage that happened to me as a child, that's how I saw myself. Now I've moved from there to this side, to being a survivor, and I hand out blank masks that have, who am I? How do others see me? And I pass those out to the, I teach a lot of addicts. I'm drawn to them. I'm drawn to gays, lesbian, cross-dressers. Those are the ones Jesus loved the most and went in the bars and pubs and preached the gospel. So this is the way others saw me. You're a butterfly, Barb. You have wings. You're gentle. You're peace. You never give up on me. You're happy, joyful. You're an author. You're courageous. You're full of purpose, a risk taker. In order to be in this kind of a ministry, you have to be a risk taker.
Absolutely.
So that I won, and I heard my name. We were at a big conference in a table, and I was ready to go back to my booth where I was selling my books and had scripture T-shirts. And I heard my name, and my book promoter said, Barb, they're calling your name. You better get up on stage. I'm like, what? Me? And they called us up and they gave us an award. So I became an award-winning author at that moment in San Diego. And I went back the following year with another poster presentation, Mr. Right and Mr. Wrong. And you never know. Like, you have had dates and I have had bad choices, and you know, the men have come on to me at Laterno University where I met my husband and take me out in park, and I had a little sundress on. I had no clue. And they went down my blouse and I'm like, take me home. In fact, I had one date with one guy that, now I'm thinking back, he must have thought I was crazy. But crazy happens to you. You're not crazy, right? So I had to go to the bathroom when I was afraid to ask him to take me in the bathroom. So I told him to take me home. No, it affects you. When you're betrayed, especially with child abuse, it violates our deepest trust, our boundaries. And I didn't even know what a boundary was. The boundary was crossed. It's an invisible line that somebody crosses, or even that you cross.
I'll tell you what, we're going to take our first break, but on the other side, I want to dig and drill in a little bit deeper on that. What does that many years as a child do to you when you push it down and try to bury it? How does that affect you all of those years? And then I do want to go into the clergy So we've had a couple on before, but I know your story, and I really want to kind of go into that briefly, but then I want to find out and show the people that's watching around the world tonight that need hope and how to lead them. But on the other side of this, I want to find out what effect does that have after all those years and how you overcame that. So we'll be right back after our first break, Breaking the Silence with Barbara Jo Hansen. Be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. Welcome back. We are here for the second segment of Breaking the Silence with Barbara Jo Hansen, the author of Listen to the Cry of the Child. And you can get on our Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page if you have questions. We already have people on there making comments and asking questions now. We'll bring Curtis on, my son, a little bit later. But I know we have a lot of story to get to. But I want to make sure, Barbara, you get the opportunity. Tell me how a child handles that kind of pain, that kind of hurt. I know how I did. I ignored it and pretended it wasn't there. How did you get through that?
You isolate. Yeah. When we got married, oh my goodness, so much happened in my marriage as well. Infidelity, pornography came in, and we're still together. We're still in love. But for me to even process all of that and, you know, go through all that, it was insane for me. And so I isolated. I went in my room, I closed the bedroom, and I started journaling. I know you did too.
That's the answer.
Yeah, that was the best thing I ever did. And I didn't know until years and years later that I even would write a book. And it's Barbara Joy, because I'm living my purpose, my joy.
Yes.
So, the family secrets destroyed me for 38 years. And it can be any sexual activity, visual, verbal, psychological, without consent, that exploits a child's need. And sex offenders who target children have often been targeted themselves. We've met them in prison. I go into... I can't say the name of it, but a prison in Massachusetts that has a sex treatment center for males. And I'll tell you a funny story. When I first went in there with my husband, the chaplain was from Venezuela, and he invited me. He had met me at a prison conference and said, would you come into my prison? He never heard anybody speak about it, and I had spoken about it. And I said, absolutely. So we got cleared and went through some training. And when I was in the car ready to preach in chapel, I weaved my testimony along with a sermon in the Bible. And it can be Lazarus coming out of the tomb, or the woman that touched the hem of Jesus' garment and she was loosed. Well, I was putting lipstick on the car, and my husband said, put that away. You don't need to wear. They're going to be looking at you. Well, we went out for dinner after the service, and I told the chaplain what my husband said to me. And my husband didn't even know anything. I mean, he knew a little bit of what I'd gone through, but, you know. So the chaplain said, no, Wayne, they're not looking at her. They're looking at you. They're male sex offenders, and male to male in prison. So I just thought that was kind of a funny story. But I thought I had the Kodak picture family. Shattered the mirror. I talk about the mirror shattered in my book. And I was held hostage for 38 to 40 years. It's like you're in a prison. And it's like the Holocaust survivors or the Vietnam vets. You cannot talk about it until you learn how. So like you, I started writing and writing and writing and writing. I couldn't look at those journals until I started writing my book. They were all on my desk, and I was afraid, wow, what if I die and somebody in the family finds these journals? And we're part of the Christian Motorcyclists Association, and I told the bikers, someday I'm going to write a book. Well, they, you know, a lot of them have been Hell's Angels and have been in and out of prison and alcoholics, et cetera. So they knew me well. And I didn't know when I was going to write it. But when God wants to call you, he's going to call you in a purpose and passion to do what he wants you to do. So I have broken the generational curse. Right. I've come out of the ashes. The generational curse is in Exodus 34:7. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished, but he punishes the children to the third and fourth generation, which happened in my family as well.
That's the average, correct? The third generation usually goes three different cycles before it's broken.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly right on target.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Barbara, tell me, if you are a woman of faith now, you and your husband, how does clergy involvement upset your entire concept of spirituality and of these people that you're supposed to look up to or respect or godly? How did that play into those two summers and into your overall strength that you have in God now?
I don't trust. I mean, if you don't trust anybody, you know, you need to find one or two close friends that you
it's
can.
It's hard to trust, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is. But I want to tell you that Walmart is so open to me putting a card table out and all my brochures and my books and a can. And I have a little domestic violence can. And people drop $20. I had a man pull up to Walmart and shove $20 bills at me. And I'm like, sir, here's my book. Take my book, you know. And he did. He's like, no, it's for you. And as a survivor of domestic violence and sexual abuse, Walmart 100% accepts people like you. You could go there and you know, earn money for your ministry, and all of it goes back to helping survivors. But you asked about the church.
Yeah.
I don't go to church anymore. And I, as a pastor's kid, I'm not embarrassed to say that. We Zoom, and we always have our my husband and I always have devotions together, and this is what changed my life. I don't know if you've ever seen it before, but the Recovery Devotional Bible.
Oh, absolutely, I have that, yes.
Oh, that changed my life forever. That was given to me by the heroin addict, and I wrote one chapter about going into prison. But I've blown the whistle on three organizations. One was the camp where I was abused by the clergy at age 11 and 12. He was preaching by night with the youth services, molesting by day. Many of my friends, three others came forward with me to face him. And I courageously, I mean, I had such panic attacks. I rang up a $350 phone bill. The discipline committee was set up for him with the Christian Missionary Alliance and the restoration committee for me for four of us, me and three of my friends. So 1 year before my facing him, I faced him in 1999. One at a time, we went in the room, and it was so difficult. I was speaking in a whisper. They had to turn up the tape recorder, and I had no clue why they were doing it. The psychologist sat next to me and the sex offender on the right, and there were about eight clergy in the room. And I took the picture of me as a very wounded little 11-year-old innocent child, and that's in my book. I have a lot of illustrations in my book. And I gave him a copy of it. And my husband is a photographer. He blew up a copy of it and gave all the clergy. And I said, I have one question asked you before I gave an hour and a quarter of my testimony. And I looked at him and my voice got stronger. And I said, who hurt you so bad that you had to hurt me? And he said, well, I was raised in a Christian home like you. And I don't recall being molested. Now, he was in complete denial. He had been taped. He had been interviewed. I might have brushed against. No, he took us up in the missionary lodge and sat us on his lap and did sexual things to himself and us, just like my grandfather. And kids that are targeted young and become preteens and teenagers and have sex out, you know, when they're with their boyfriends, they're groomed for it. And it's a hard thing to break. But after he thanked me for coming, he said, I don't know if you can find it in your heart to forgive me. Well, I was already starting to teach Beauty Out of Ashes, a support group, for a faith-based support group. And I said, forgive you? Of course. I couldn't be here without already having forgiven you. But I said, you need to run into recovery for whoever you harmed. You hurt hundreds of children from campground to campground to campground. He was sent to the Bahamas, I learned later, to do further youth ministry, to harm children. So there's adult survivors in the Bahamas. And I don't know if he ever got right with God, because only 7 weeks later, I got a shocking phone call from the head of the committee weeping. He knew him. My mother knew him. My mother was an accomplished pianist and organist at the campground. Everybody knew him. He had this jovial, happy, and they hide behind their mask. And he fell down the stairs and broke his back and died 7 weeks after I chose to forgive him. Now, forgiveness isn't something I tell people they have to do, because that's hard. Premature forgiveness kept me stuck. I forgave my husband for the pornography and infidelity. My kids found the magazines. I'd never seen anything like that in my life. And as you know, as a pastor's kid, you normally don't see dirty magazines. And so premature forgiveness kept me stuck.
Can you explain that statement?
Yeah.
Premature forgiveness gets you stuck. Explain what that means for us that have to forgive more.
It hinders your healing process if you premature forgive before you grieve. Grieving is the huge, huge step to me to getting whole. When I wrote my book and it tumbled out, I wrote it in 1 week after 38 years of secrets. 1 week it poured out. I had it in my journal. So, I mean, my book was there and, you know, all the pain was there. Right. And it just poured and poured and poured out. But anger is a natural response from being betrayed. And if you're going to hold on to that pain and the grief, and unforgiveness becomes like a noose around your neck. And we need to let the ember of hatred go, which I did in the sex abuse trial when I faced this clergy. An eye for an eye, the world would be blind. So I am so glad. I mean, it was hard, but I'm so relieved, because then that started the healing process.
Okay. So we shouldn't just say, oh, I forgive you and move on. It needs to be a process of, when that forgiveness is entered in, there is a real process. It's not just lip language, lip movement. It's a heartfelt, true forgiveness.
Yeah, and I know abuse survivors are controlling. I hated it when my husband said, you're controlling, and I knew I was. You control what you can. And so when I heard him say that to me, I didn't realize, and it didn't hit me how controlling I was. So when you let that control go and let God and let him have his way, and I've become much more calmer, much more peaceful, and, you know, my life isn't shattered anymore. Satan can't get me anymore. He can go back to hell where he belongs.
There you go.
You know, yeah.
Amen. Hey, I got my son, Curtis. He is here. He does have, we've had several comments on Facebook. So, Curtis, jump on in, meet Barbara Joy, and this is my son, Curtis. Barbara, what kind of question do you have, or questions from, I believe, Forrest?
But, yeah, we got two questions from our good friend, Forrest Lane.
Hey, Forrest.
His first one is, what was the catalyst that finally got you to tell your story?
Oh.
Well, facing the clergy, number one, and writing my book, going back to my journals, reading the journals. I mean, I probably had about 10 or 12 journals with all the things. Every chapter of my book has, you know, things in it. And it's not just about sexual abuse. My husband's father committed suicide. So he comforted himself with women. And you know, you can comfort yourself with alcohol, with sex, with drugs, whatever. And that was his comfort until he healed from his past and started grieving and talking about it. But this is what changed my life, given to me by the heroin drug dealer that we brought in and out of our home. And you'll have to have me on another time for that story, because that's really a heavy story.
Was the catalyst, like Forrest is asking, was it then being dragged into a court setting and testifying?
I wasn't dragged.
I know that. But I mean, you didn't have a catalyst. You were being asked questions, right?
Right.
Is that kind of the beginning of the opening?
Oh, that was hard. I mean, I was in my dining room. You can never forget what they did. And so I put a candle out. It was winter. I put a blanket on. I was not cold. I was just so anxious. I'm like, okay, this committee that's been set up by the Christian Missionary Alliance headquarters in Colorado Springs, I really need to write it down. And so I had to write a letter to the committee to tell the committee what he did at the camp. And so I started writing and I sent it to the committee. I didn't even know how to turn on the computer. And my husband, being an engineer, is a fixer. And at one time he wanted to fix me. So, you know, you can't control anybody but your own behavior. So, yeah, but the catalyst was to face the clergy and then start writing my book, getting these journals right. And start processing it all. And I didn't have any awareness. I would go to the library and get, and there's no books. I mean, there are hardly any books. My book is a book of hope. It has answers, awareness, how to talk to your children in it. It describes my story, but also has scripture verses woven in it.
Absolutely.
It's not a preachy type, as you know, book. I'm not a Bible thumper. Yeah. But can I read this poster? Because I blew the whistle then on two churches. This was made for me by a domestic violence survivor.
Okay.
And it's got people with tears weeping. And all around the picture, it says stained glass pane. I wept and I tried and I prayed and I sought. And he was cruel and hurtful with words like a shredder. And we are Christians getting ripped apart and the church is silent.
Mm-hmm.
The glass in the window of the church is not clear because we don't want to clean it, or we would have to look and see what's dirty, and we would rather not.
Wow, that's powerful. Tell you what, Curtis, if you can hang around, we're going to take our last break, and then we'll come back with your second question with Barbara Joy Hansen. And don't leave us. We'll be right back after the next break.
I forget what the question was.
Curtis is going to just spring it on you on the other side of this break. Here we go. We'll be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. We have about 15 minutes left to go for the last segment of our program. And Curtis, go ahead and ask the last question, or the next question that you have from Forrest.
Yes, sir. The question is, what would you say to yourself when you were 19 or 20 years old, knowing what you know now? What would you say to yourself when you were 19 and 20?
19 and 20?
Yes, ma'am.
Take care of yourself. Put God first. Put yourself next to God. I was taking care of everybody else. I was an enabler. I rescued. And a lot of us that have gone through abuse take care of, especially women. We're born to be mothers or wives or work, and we are very much, you know, caregivers. And so we had a pool, we had the skateboarders, I have three grown sons, and so I rescued. And I would say, just Barb, take care of yourself. Don't always think you've got to do for everybody else. And that's what I would tell him.
What do you think that is, Barbara, that we do? Because I noticed that in myself. I will go out of my way and even hurt myself. I don't mean physically, but hurt myself with energy or lack of energy or just overwork to try to help somebody else through their process and then ignore mine completely. Why is it? Do you think there's a connection there?
Yeah, absolutely there is. We took this drug dealer in, heroin, drug addict out of prison. I started writing letters to him, and that's another whole story. But he came in and out of our house for 8 years. In out of prison, went right back to the crack, and in and out of our house, he called us, can you help me? And we get him in a rehab. Well, one time he came in and he detoxed in our house. So when my marriage was void, when that happened with these things in my marriage, the rug was pulled out from underneath me. And I didn't know how to cope. I was, you know, we had fights. It was horrible, horrible, horrible in our home. And my husband screamed at me. He hadn't dealt with his father's suicide, so that anger in him was deep. And he had PTSD. He didn't think he had it. He made fun of me because I had it. And PTSD, you know, is like the war vets. You shut down. I don't know if you know it, but it's called traumatic amnesia. PTSD is like it goes in your head. All the trauma after the other, the deeper it goes, the more you had. I mean, it can be a child that you are babysitting that gets hit by a car that dies. And this isn't even your kid. So it's terrifying crimes that go deeper and deeper and deeper, and you become numb. And you have sleep disorders, bedwetting, nail biting, chewing on pens. Almost everybody that comes in our support group, I look at their nails. And mine, I used to bite my nails. My mother always told me not to. I didn't know, you know, why I was doing this. So why we enable, why we rescue is because there's a void in our lives. There's something deeply, deeply wrong and something missing. So okay. I was getting more attention from this gorgeous looking Cape Verdean with a dimple, 19 years younger than me. He thought I was, because I was a pastor's daughter and a missionary's daughter, he thought I was all that in a handbag. And he had already had 400 women. I asked him one time sexually. And so it was just, I thought it was normal to take people like, I mean, we had Boston gangsters, a hitman from Boston, from our neighborhood, one of the ex-Hells Angels guys met this guy. His street name was Nasty. And boy, he could become nasty. And he had demons. So we do spiritual warfare, Ephesians 6, 19. And we've learned, we've had to learn their world and how to, you know, cast out demons. And most Christians have no clue what I'm even talking about, because that's something you don't deal with lightly at all. And we brought him in and had a biker party. My friends came over and we threw him a birthday party because I led him to faith in Christ the night that the demons were there and he had a gun under his bed. He said, and I went through the four spiritual laws, which is in my book, and how to lead somebody to Christ. There's only four steps. When I came to the fourth step where you actually say the prayer, the demons, I could hear this guttural, awful voice, and I was on the phone with him because he was supposed to come over for dinner and he wouldn't come over. He was so evil and the demons were in him. And I heard a different voice and I knew it was demons. And so he said, "Well, I can't come for supper. I'm sorry." And the next morning he calls us. He got this recovery devotional Bible. We buy everyone in my support group a copy because unless they can afford it, because that's what changed me. So he was stopping going to AA meetings and somebody would knock on the door. He said, "This is why I'm not coming to AA." And I led him to Christ. He called the next morning and told me that he had a gun. He would have blown his brains out.
Mm. On the last few minutes that we have in the program, there's a lot of people that sitting at home that haven't built up the courage to break their own personal silence. What can you offer as far as hope? What's a step or two that they need to hear of how to find that hope in their life if they just don't seem to be able to get a hold of it now? What would you say to them?
Everybody needs hope in this world, especially. At the grocery store, give somebody a smile. And I know you've paid for meals. We've done the same thing. I don't give the addicts or the homeless money. I mean, I used to. We bought this one guy a car. And, you know, we've rescued and paid their bills and all that. We can't do that. We minister emotionally and spiritually only. So the hope that we give them is in, I'm an overcomer. And it's based in Mark 5, 25 to 34. The woman that touched only the hem of Jesus' garment was loosed from her infirmity and set free. I was that woman. I was Lazarus, dead woman walking, coming out of the tomb. And Lazarus' friends told, Jesus told Lazarus' friends, "Loose him and let him go." T.D. Jakes wrote a book about loosening.
Woman Thou Art Loosed.
That was one of the first books I read, and it was amazing, and they have one for men too. So, I was bleeding for years, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, verbally, you name it.
What's the first step in the last minute or two that we have? What's the first step that they ought to take if they're looking for hope and need it right now?
Get my book. I got a lot written in my book, but the first step is really crying out to God. God, I need you. I need you every hour. And I didn't know how much I needed him. And I had friends call me and say, "Barb, you need to come to Bible study. You need to do this." No, I spent time in this Word of God, the Recovery Devotional Bible, AA-based 12-step Bible. And that, literally, I couldn't get enough out of it. I wrote, I highlighted it, and I became from a victim to a thriver and survivor. As I cried out for God to heal what the locusts had eaten by the crimes of my past, I was afflicted but not crushed. I was perplexed but not desolate. And I became a woman that I don't even recognize. We went back to my husband's college reunion in Texas. People didn't recognize me. They didn't know anything. Nobody did.
Okay, so you're saying cry out to God, get into the Word, and whatever that Word in the format, like the Recovery Study Bible. What about an action step they can take for self-care?
You have to take care of your health. I go outside in my garden. I have a beautiful, we took the pool down when the kids left and the skateboard ramp because my husband and I don't skateboard. But that's my piece, is to go out and take a walk, go out and, you know, rake the leaves. I don't like to rake. I blow them and my husband rakes them. But to go out and plant the flowers. I have a $25,000 garden when we took the pool out, put in, and with all kinds of flowers coming up from spring to fall. And I'm really blessed because my almost 22-year-old granddaughter now, beautiful, comes over and helps me. And 2 days a week, she's been helping me clean the house and wash the windows and do the leaves around the plants. But in Jeremiah 30:17, it says, "For I will restore you and give you hope. I will restore," and because you were called an outcast. That's what I saw myself. That's what you saw yourself, as an outcast, as an underdog. And I don't anymore. I see people at Walmart. I know the shame is behind their face. I know that they're shut down. One trans person put a dollar in my bucket. And I said, here's my book. And she had a man bun, and she said, "No, I can't afford it." And I gave my testimony always, and I do it in a very gentle way. And she said, I can't. I said, "No, this is for you. You take it. You've been wounded like this, right?" And she could hardly stop crying. And she took it and went over for a cigarette break and wept by her friends that she worked with at Walmart. And I see her when I go back. I have two Walmart back to back next Saturday and Sunday, and 8 this summer. So you try that.
That's great. I tell you what, before we go, because it looks like we have about a minute. Tell me about your work with the NAASCA. What kind of work do they do? In about a minute's time, we're about out.
I'm a co-host of NASCA, and I know you've called in the show. And I'll tell you, the night you called in was my best show ever, because you spoke about physical effects as a result of sexual abuse or domestic violence. So the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, www.naasca.org. I was asked to co-host it about 3 years ago. And when I gave my whole testimony one night, it wasn't a panel discussion like when you call in. You can call in, and I think you're already booked to do that. It's amazing. And almost all people that call in, they're suicidal. I had one woman call in, and she did commit suicide a couple weeks later. You have such an opportunity to give hope and awareness and answers. And I've sold a lot of my books that way. You can get my book directly from us. And you can get it anywhere. But if you get my book from us, it helps us in our ministry. And we give that money back to the addicts.
The website to do that, Barbara? Because we're about out of time.
Okay. www.listentothecry.org. And my phone number is 508-473-1280. And you may call my house. If I don't answer, please leave a message.
Fantastic. Barbara, I tell you what, it was a joy having you with us tonight. Thank you so much. You can also, I believe, get this on Amazon, but I think it'll be a little extra bonus for you because I have all kinds of these extra pages in here that she put in if you get it straight from her. So make sure you do that. Thank you, Barbara, so much. We'll have you back on again. And when you write the next book or whatever, if you have something, we can go deeper into your ministry and how you help people. As we always do each and every week, I just want to let you know before we close out the show, no matter what's going on with you in life, no matter what's happened to you, Barbara is a perfect example. My life's a perfect example that there is always, always hope. Never give up on hope. And I hope that's the message you got this evening. God bless, Barbara. Tell Wayne, thank you. And it was great to meet him. We'll see you next week right here for another edition, live from Houston, Texas, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless and have a great
week. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.